Welcome and thanks for joining us for this May 2006 episode of The Accidental Technologist, Adventures in EdTech. I'm Zhang, or Trang Lai, your host. We have more exciting EdTech adventures. We will continue exploring Web 2.0 with Bernie Dodge. This month's focus will be about blogs and podcasting, my favorite. Our interview segment will include teachers and students who use email, blogs, and message boards through Gaggle.net. Under the Thinking Map sections, we will focus on bubble maps. And now, we will move on to Discoveries at Q this past March 2006. To recap, at Q, I had the pleasure of listening to Bernie Dodge, the father of the famous WebQuest. His presentation was entitled GeoTeleWikiPod Blogcasting for Understanding. Last time, we looked specifically at the geo part. This time, we're going to move on into blogs and podcasting. Blogs are more than just diaries. Blogs are the words web and logs combined to equal blogs. However, there is a dark side to blogs. Who hasn't heard of MySpace.com and its accompanying bad press? However, we can turn this into a positive tool for teaching. Irregardless, according to Bernie Dodge, there's no denying that the blog universe is expanding every second. Unlike diaries, blogs are very public. You publish it on the web and anyone could read it. So let's take a look at a few of the blog sites that are specifically designed for teacher use. One is called Blogmeister, BlogMeister. At this site, there's a section for students in the elementary and secondary level. There's a site for university students and one for ESL students. It's a blogging environment for schools. Another free blog site for educators is edublogs.org. That's edublogs.org. Check it out. Let me know what you think. How can educators use blogs? Well, blogs can be a place to reflect on our instruction. Others may respond if they wish, but its purpose may be just for one thing, and that is timely reflection. Especially for new teachers, it often seems like we are alone in our classrooms. Blogs may be a way to have others who have similar situations respond for the benefit of all. Want to check out an educator's blog site for educators? Try One Trick Pony. This one is by Bernie Dodge. I took a quick peek and found some interesting hyperlinks. Blogs can be educational or just social, like MySpace, but two researchers have found that blogs increase learning when they were used as a way to reflect on learning. The students might focus on questions they still had or perhaps on insights they gained. The researchers also found that learning increased by 30% when blogs were focused for instruction. Why blog? It's a quick and easy way to publish your thoughts. It's also a form of self-expression. It develops personality. That means it helps voice. As teachers, we know that this is one of the most difficult things to develop in young writers. Blogs can help them develop that voice. Blogs also offer a wider audience. Kids write more if they aren't writing just for the teacher. There's also peer feedback, and we can also create a community of learners. As with teachers, blogs can also be used as a place for reflection. Students can reflect on their own learning in a blog. Now, how can blogs be utilized in teaching students? The most obvious way is to use it as a learning journal, just about a particular class or subject area. But remember, what the research showed is that it must be up to the teacher to create the purpose and focus of learning. Another way that we can use blogs is as a collaboration with distant classrooms where everyone is an audience. Again, there needs to be a purpose. Perhaps a sharing of persuasive essays. One class writes, the other class performs, videotapes it, and sends it back to the class who wrote the play. Or perhaps they can role-play a historical figure and express it in a blog. That is, a historical diary. For instance, it could be a solo or multi-role blog where students can write a day-by-day journal as if they were one of the historical figures. Now let's move on to my favorite, podcasting. Bernie Dodge says that we need to focus on the content. 90% of our focus should be on the content, 10% on hardware. The problem with most podcasts out there, and there are many, in fact, over 60,000 podcasts are available, and most of the content really isn't worth listening to. So why should we podcast? It's definitely a form of self-expression, just like blogs. I can vouch for that one because this is my podcast and I am its producer and director. What you hear and see is me with a capital M-E. It can also be a form of collaboration with other classrooms or individuals, perhaps with an author or scientist. It helps to create voice or personality, very similar to blogs. It gives students a sense of audience. They're not doing it for an audience of one, the teacher, but a much wider audience, and perhaps even an actual audience. Another area that Bernie finds useful as a teaching tool is that it requires planfulness. That is, it requires scripting and thinking. They have to design it, and that helps other parts of student learning. And with most, if not all, schools wired to the net, it is ubiquitous learning, according to Bernie Dodge. How about some designs for teaching with podcasts? Bernie Dodge recommends perhaps doing a magazine article format, interview with an expert, interview on a topic, or perhaps a reenactment. Soundscapes might be a possibility. And I'd like to add that you can use it as a sound seeing tour of a particular location. In fact, in my next podcast, I hope to have one set up as an example. You'll be able to see and hear my world, Longden School, from the perspective of a sixth grade class. So be sure to drop by for the June episode of The Accidental Technologist. I think it would be safe to say that not all technology is created equal. The kind of technology that's useful for the classrooms are one where students are able to create and construct their own learning. And that's why I was really interested in using Gaggle.net in the classroom. And it doesn't really have to be Gaggle. It could be any safe program that allows students and teachers to use email, blogs, message boards, and chat rooms. Gaggle.net is one of those sites. How is Gaggle safe? Well, one way is that only teachers and those that teachers allow can be on this website. There are also many filters to protect students from unwanted material. If there's ever anything questionable, it's sent directly to a blocked folder, and the teachers have to approve it before it can be sent on. Filters can also be customized to meet the needs of the teacher. Teachers can also restrict who can contact students and whom students can contact. It's free for schools if you don't mind the ads. Otherwise, there is a fee for the non-ad version. As an administrator, I don't want to spend the money until I see that it is being widely used at our school site. So far, only two teachers have actively joined Gaggle.net. When I saw how excited the teachers and the students were about using Gaggle.net, I decided that I had to interview them. So for this episode of The Accidental Technologist, I have some great interviews with insights about using Gaggle.net. So join us for the next section of interviews. Our special guest today on The Accidental Technologist is Debbie D'Orazio, a fourth grade teacher at Longden School. My first question today is, how do you think technology affects student learning?
I think technology affects student learning. It gives them hands-on learning instead of sitting at their desks using pens and pencils. I think they're able to see their work directly once they finish their project or typing a paper.
So when students know that they're going to do a project that involves technology, how do the students react?
I think students are very excited to start a project that uses different forms of technology. They use it at home every day, but to be able to use it at school is pretty exciting to them. They get to use what they know.
My next question is, I know that you've been using Gaggle in the classroom. Tell me about some of your experiences with Gaggle.
I started the students off with emailing each other and to get them to write complete sentences on the computer. And then we went into the chat room, so they were able to chat with students. And then I took it one step further where I would put a question on the message board, and they would have to answer that question for homework.
Debbie, can you give us an example of what type of question you would put on the message board and what kind of answer students would give?
After we have read a book, The Great Horn Spoon, I had put a question on there about if you were working in the gold rush, what type of job would you open? What kind of business would you open? And most of them said that they would open a gold mining store. So I was able to ask them a deeper question and say, you know, what other types of businesses did they need in 1849? I had also asked a question about if they had a butler, what would the butler do for them? And most of them said that they would have them do laundry. And one of the students said that they would have their butler open the door for them. And so other students were able to reply to that answer. And some of them said, well, opening a door is very easy. What else could you have a butler do? And so I thought that was really great that they were able to reply to each other's statements.
So now they know that it's not just what the teacher is saying, but that other people can also look at what they say. And they can, their responses seem to, because I went on the net and I checked this section, and it seemed like the answers could be purer. Because the things that they reply to, we would sound sarcastic, but when students do it, it's actually honesty. They're really being honest about the questions that they ask each other. So how has Gaggle affected your teaching or their learning?
It's quite funny because when I read the responses the next day, I can hear the kids talking about other students' responses. And so they're actually talking about curriculum that we've learned the previous day. And so that's really exciting that they're going beyond just the day's lesson. They're actually carrying it out the next day.
So this is what they mean in the digital age, is that the classroom begins to, the borders or the classroom walls begin to disintegrate because the learning can go beyond the classroom. They can do it on message boards. They can do it through email. So this is very exciting. So what other ways can message boards enhance your classroom instruction?
I think it's a great end of the lesson assessment. If I post a question on the message board, I'm able to see, did the students learn what I needed them to learn? So I think it's going to be a great assessment tool.
You seem very excited about using the message boards. How do the students feel?
They ask me every day, is there going to be a question on the message board? And so if I don't have one, I feel like I need to put one on there because they're very excited to go look online and see if there's a message.
Well, it looks like this keeps you on your toes and keeps them on their toes. Thank you so much, Ms. DeRazio, for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'd like to welcome three students here to the Accidental Technologist. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, my name is Vincent.
Hi, my name is Sydney.
Hi, my name is Alex.
Our three students today are from Ms. DeRazio's class, fourth grade students who have been using Gaggle.net. How does using Gaggle.net affect your learning or how you feel about learning?
Gaggle.net makes learning more interesting because if you forget something that you did in class, you can redo it by answering the question.
So your teacher lets you redo assignments through Gaggle.net? Is that what happens?
Like if for a social studies, if she asks you questions that you've already learned and then you need to answer it.
So you have a second chance to answer it?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Okay. What do you think, Sydney?
I think it's more interesting because sometimes if you forget where to go, you can ask where to go just in case.
How do you ask? What do? To ask the questions?
You just email people.
So you use email as a way to get the assignment? Is that correct? Okay. And what do you think, Alex?
I think it's funner and it helps you because it's mainly review of what you did in class.
Do you like the fact that you're doing homework outside of the class? How does that make you feel that you're using Gaggle.net to do school stuff?
It feels better because you're not that distracted with all the other kids around you and you're just by yourself, since we have a lot of kids in our class.
Thank you, Alex. I also have a Gaggle.net account, and I know that Gaggle.net is composed of many different things. For instance, there's a message board, there is email, there are blogs available, and there are chat rooms available. And I wanted to ask the three of you, what was your favorite part of Gaggle.net? So let's start with Sydney this time.
My favorite part about Gaggle.net is the chat room, because sometimes if you don't have your friend's phone number or something, you can go on and see if they're on and talk to them.
How many times have you been in the chat room?
About 3 times.
Okay, great. And how about you? What do you think, Vincent? What was your favorite part of Gaggle.net?
My favorite part was when you get to email your friends, because then you can talk to each other back and forth.
Great. And how about you, Alex? What's your favorite part of Gaggle.net?
My favorite part about Gaggle is the email part, because you could just talk about anything and you don't have to answer any questions unless your friends ask you something about school or sports or something else.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us at The Accidental Technologist, and good luck in your pursuit of technology. We have another special guest to The Accidental Technologist. I welcome Leslie Klipstein to The Accidental Technologist. And Leslie is a student teacher at Longdon School, and she has some prior teaching experience. But I wanted to talk to someone who's relatively new to the teaching field. And this year you had the chance to use Gaggle.net. And I was wondering if you can tell us about how you feel about Gaggle.
I think that Gaggle is a wonderful addition to the classroom. It has contributed to the cohesiveness socially, as the kids have an opportunity to chat with each other and email each other. And I've seen some new friendships develop and some students really come out of their shell. And I don't know if that's Gaggle.net or springtime, but what I like to do with Gaggle is to do follow-up questions after a lesson and put them on the message board. And then students take or use Gaggle at home to answer those questions. And I get a sense of their engagement with the material and what they're thinking about outside of the classroom.
You touched on things that I never thought about the communication and the developing of friendship. So that's really very interesting. How do you, or are there other ways that you see in the future for using Gaggle when you get your own classroom?
Well, I would love to use Gaggle when I get my own classroom, but I want to follow up on one thing you said first, and that is breaking down the walls of the classroom. I think when kids have the opportunity to use Gaggle at home, that it provides an opportunity to forge connections between the classroom and home. And I'm hoping that when they get on Gaggle, their parents are asking them, what are you doing and what are you typing and who are you talking to? And so that it opens that line of communication and brings the parent piece into the virtual school as well. There are a couple ways I would think of using Gaggle in my own classroom. One is sort of before a new lesson, to find out what students already know and to get them thinking about the topic before I introduce it into the classroom. So I know when they come in the next day, they're excited about it. They know what we're going to talk about and maybe have had some thoughts or talk to their parents or talk to each other about it.
Thank you so much. You've added a lot of insight to how we could use technology in the classroom with something that's really relatively inexpensive. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for coming on to The Accidental Technologist. We have Mary Sneed, fourth grade teacher from Longdon School. She is one of the few teachers who took the plunge and tried out Gaggle.net this year. Tell them about your experiences with Gaggle.net and how you feel about it.
My children love technology, and they were very, very excited to have a website to go to, and I was comfortable having them go on a website that I felt was safe for them to be on. It's in my class, I have one little student in particular who is very shy, doesn't like to open his mouth to talk. Apparently he talks a lot at home but doesn't talk at school, and he was one of my first real regular users of Gaggle. He's on there all the time, asking questions, emailing the whole class, asking to get on chat rooms, and it's really been a good outlet for him to come out of his shell, and his mother said he's very excited about it at home. He always wants to go on.
That's great.
One day when three of them were sitting at computers next to each other and they had decided to set up a chat room at that point, and they were actually talking to each other as they were chatting. They were a little unclear on the concept of a chat room at that point. They had fun. They had a whole conversation going both verbally and on the computer, so it was really kind of humorous to watch them.
I'm assuming that writing and communication has been improving in your class.
Oh, yes. They have learned what dialogue looks like.
That's great. I know that there was one problem. Do you want to talk about that one problem that you had with the email and how we resolved that issue?
He was getting quite a few things that were very inappropriate, and I knew he wasn't sending it because that's not the type of student he is. We actually had to set up his name under his first name rather than his last name. They were showing up as blocked messages, luckily, so I was catching them.
Yeah, I think that's the wonderful thing about Gaggle, is that at least even though he was getting inappropriate email, it was blocked, so he wasn't seeing it. One of the biggest concerns that teachers have is that when they have this email account, there's going to be a lot of inappropriate things. Have you found any difficulties like that?
Not so much between the children. I think because I've warned them that I can go into their mail at any time. I've had very few things that have been blocked.
So would it be safe to assume that next year you'll allow students to have a Gaggle account?
Oh, yes, because they're emailing me, and I think I'll do it right from the beginning of the year. I think they're enjoying it, and it's a safe outlet for them to communicate.
So it sounds like there's been very little monitoring that you've had to do.
Yes, I've really eased up on monitoring their mail accounts.
Thank you so much, Mary, for joining us on The Accidental Technologist: Adventures in EdTech.
Now, on to the Thinking Map section of the podcast. Today, we're going to focus on bubble maps. Bubble maps are used for describing, using adjectives and adjective phrases. When I was in the classroom, I really enjoyed teaching through the writing process and writer's workshop. The biggest stumbling block for my students at all grade levels was using descriptions to enhance their writings. They might use a few superlatives here or there, but it was quite difficult to get the students to slow down and hover over an idea and describe it in detail. That's where bubble maps come in handy. Bubble maps make the students stop to think about how to describe a character or an event in detail. Using bubble maps can be tricky. Therefore, it is imperative that teachers teach students how to use the bubble maps in a directed mini lesson. The most effective way is to cut out magazine pictures or calendar pictures and have students spend time describing it. Do this until students become proficient before you have them apply it to their own writing. In a bubble map, students can only use adjectives or adjective phrases, as I stated before. And I mean it. No nouns or verbs or other parts of speech. This map forces students to really think of descriptors. It isn't easy, but I think you'll be pleased with the results. Once students are relatively proficient, then you can ask students to apply this new skill to their own writings. Have students use the flea map. Then have them choose one character to place in the middle of the bubble map. Then they are to describe this character. Afterwards, they use those adjectives or adjective phrases in their writing. The hard thinking is done ahead of time, and they can just do a drag and drop into their own writing. Here are a few things to watch out for. Number one, only use adjectives or adjective phrases. Number two, don't be tempted to let them use other parts of speech, words, or phrases. And number three, the bubble map is not a web or a cluster or a spider map. Don't confuse the students and ask them to fill in whatever they want. It isn't a brainstorm. It is a focusing device that forces students to really stop and think.
And number four, if you want to just have them define something and tell all that they know about a topic, then use a circle map, because that's what a circle map is for. It's for defining things. It is much more flexible, and you can use any type of words for a circle map. Okay, the most important thing is not to confuse it with the traditional webs, clusters, or spiders. Now go out there and bubble map wisely and carefully. Although bubble maps can be a very powerful device for helping students to think about using adjectives and adjective phrases in their writing, it is not surprising that I only have one example of a bubble map. And this one comes from Shelley John Clays, a third grade teacher at La Rosa School. She is one of our frequent contributors. So thank you so much, Shelley, for sending this one in. This map is not used as often as some of our other maps, but once you see how it is possible to use it to focus descriptive writing, I think everyone will use it more often. I am guessing, but I do believe that this bubble map is based on a story from Houghton Mifflin. Shelley added her own touch by adding a picture of Little Willie in the middle of the bubble map. The words are all adjectives. If this was taken to a writing assignment, the student could easily drag and drop those words into their writing. I also like the extension that Shelley had students do. They each had to choose an adjective and show how they're like Willie and why. This allows students to connect their own life with the characters. Thank you so much, Shelley, for sharing another great example of thinking maps. In closing, I'd like to thank all the teachers and students who allowed me to interview them for this episode of The Accidental Technologists. I hope you'll join us again next month as I feature a student-done project. So thank you so much for joining us for this month's episode. I hope that your curiosity has been piqued and technology will catch you in its web, because it has already captured your students. They have a voice and they need you to hear them.